Lake Ontario. For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNUSANews.com.
So worry not if you're looking for a tablet that just isn't really... It's just, you know, just all the tablets out there on the market, they do wonderful things. They go to websites, they play music, they play movies, they have clearly have books, these e-readers. But you know what? If you couldn't find one that was they're just not religious enough, there is one for you. And we're going to talk about it here on Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. My name is Sam, and with me, as usual, is Mike.
Hey.
And Becky, hey.
Hello.
Hello. So, Mike, you ran into the pre-show today. Just all a Twitter over this new e-reader.
Yes. I actually found this through our good friend Hemet Mehta over at The Friendly Atheist. He was talking about this, and I couldn't stop giggling about this for about an hour. The Evangelical Christian to the Nook and the Kindle e-reader tablets is here!
Ta-da!
It's the Family Christian Bookstore, and guess what? Surprise! It's substandard! according to their own chart, they put up their own chart on familychristian.com to compare their device with both the Nook and the Kindle, the Amazon and Barnes & Noble e-reader tablets.
You gotta give them credit for being honest. You do.
Yeah, but there's a level of honesty that almost verges on stupidity.
Yeah, okay.
When you're trying to sell something, you don't mention, oh, and by the way, this car falls apart after 20,000 miles.
So they actually listed it as a selling point, all of these ways in which they are substandard?
I don't know that they were listing it as a selling point, but they had a breakout chart of the various devices. And it was, it does have the same processor, but man, these days an ARM processor is the cheapest part of your device. It's actually slower. It has the same amount of flash. It's bigger. Its battery isn't as good.
It only has 80% screen resolution to its competitors.
Yeah. And this is the worst part. It's a resistive touchscreen. And for those of you not in the technical know, that really awesome touchscreen you get on modern phones, it's like glass and it's instantly responsive. And you remember how much better it was versus the touchpads on like the Palm Pilots and stuff like that? Well, this has the Palm Pilot touchscreen. It's ridiculous. But it comes with 27 different translations of the Bible.
27?
Yeah, for all 6 people in the world who need that.
Well, what's his name? William Lane Craig might want 27. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Bart Ehrman might want 27 different translations.
And I think this is a bit weird because there's the differences between the markets. Most people who are going to want to buy this device aren't going to be interested in 27 different translations. They only want the one real and true version, probably, King James, NIV, Klingon, whatever.
You know, the really sad thing is that most Bibles, you can get available for free on most e-readers.
And yeah.
You might not know this, but the Bible is actually public domain.
So I never really considered the copyright status of the Bible, I have to admit.
Well, we can be certain that the authors have been dead for a very long time, and
that's true.
The authors weren't Disney, so...
It's lapsed into public domain.
Absolutely.
Fair enough.
But not only do you get 27 pre-downloaded versions of the Bible, which, by the way, you can get on other e-readers for pennies if you want. There are 2 streaming Christian radio stations on there, and best of all, a restricted, safe browser.
I think that's really probably the selling point for a lot of parents and pastors and communities that don't want, you know, the internet creep, coming into your religion.
This is the market. It's people who need their entire life to be completely... to be completely sheltered and insisted in this bubble of Christianity. It's an enormous market in the United States and in other parts of the world. You listen to your Christian radio stations, you have your Christian I am not kidding, there's a Christian operating system. It's a variant of Ubuntu, I forget what it's called.
Is it also substandard?
Well, it's Ubuntu, so, I mean...
They didn't build most of it then.
Right. Although I have
much
my
like
opinions
Christianity,
about Ubuntu.
Did they adopt, you know, other
Yeah, so they've got their own operating system, their own books, their own, you know, the special stores they go to, the special bookstores they go to, just so that it's not just smut, it's not just swearing or questionable media, it's actually things which are contrary to what they believe. It's this thought bubble that
Can you access Wikipedia on the Christian tablet?
I would imagine.
maybe most of it.
Yeah.
It's weird that there is this kind of odd, separatist sort of isolated world that Christians have sort of built for themselves. Not all Christians, certainly, but certainly a subset of evangelical Christianity in the United States.
Right on. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to just lay the blame on Christians for this. Everybody does this. I mean, if you look at my Facebook page for a minute, and technology has really gone a long way to make this easier. If you look at my Facebook page, you'd think 90% of the world was atheists. You know, it's just because of the way media has figured out, the way this technology has figured out what I wanted and the kind of people I hang out with, it's just my world looks a lot more atheist than the real world.
But to play perhaps the literal devil's advocate here,
right?
You also don't put a moat around your little world either.
No, I try not to, but that's an effect of mine. And I think this is something that just happens every time you make a decision and every time you join a community, is that your personal world, your view on the world, tends to look more and more like the community that you're a member of. It just so happens with Christians, because they have that privilege and because there's such an enormous population in the United States, it's a very effective industry. And so there's a lot of money into building that wall.
So you can read no comic books except something about, say, Bible Man.
Right.
You can listen to nothing but Christian rock, nothing but Christian magazines,
Christian breakfast cereal,
radio stations.
Yeah.
I guess, even though I am an atheist, and I have, of course, I travel in the same atheist circles that you do, Sam, I don't want every other part of my life to be, I guess you could say, dipped in my atheism.
Right, right.
When I read, say, like an Aquaman comic book, I don't need to have my belief system reinforced to me and have everything in my life tell me that I'm right about just this one part of my life.
Well, just as another, for instance, how it's not just Christians that do this. Becky, this was a big part. I mean,
yes, I mean, I grew up in a Reformed Jewish community, but a very active and observant Reformed Jewish community. And there were definitely, sort of in our youth group years, there were pushes to say, hey, how much Judaism do you want to incorporate into your life? And I had lots of friends that would sort of dabble in what would have happened if I wear a yarmulke not just during services. What if I decided to wear it to public high school every day? What would happen? What would happen if I said, you know, morning prayers every morning just to incorporate Judaism into my life, at all times? And it was an interesting experiment for a lot of us. Not many of us clung to that for very long, but it's something to sort of push the boundaries and see. And I'm kind of in agreement with Mike. I didn't really want everything in my life to be viewed through a Jewish lens at the exclusion of everything else.
But within the Jewish community, there are people who will not leave that community, who want everything.
Absolutely. There are Orthodox rabbis that say you shall not go onto the internet because the internet will bring you out of Orthodoxy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very, observant in many ways. I mean, religiously observant that, when young Orthodox teens go on the internet, they find out that, oh, wow, the world is kind of different.
The truth is, and this is going to sound a little odd, they're actually smart to do this, because the outside world is dangerous to these sort of supernatural beliefs, these sort of beliefs about the world where you say, this is the only way to live, this is the only way to achieve this outcome at the end of your life, this is the only way to be good with God. That you're going to, when you step out into the world, whether it's on the internet or past your little moat around your neighborhood, you're going to encounter people who have different ideas than you. You're going to encounter people on the internet who actually have looked at your ideas very closely and don't think that they hold water, and will tell you why.
Right.
And
I don't know that they're smart to do this, but it is clearly cultural protection.
It ensures the continuity of your own particular sect.
Yeah.
There's a self-awareness there that they know that this is dangerous, that they know that contrary ideas and starting a discussion to things that they'd like to say are simply self-evident is dangerous to their group dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a cheap tablet they probably bought in wholesale and just put their own operating system on, but it speaks to a much larger sort of thing that you see in religious communities.
Incidentally, I would love to see if anyone managed to get their hands on it, whether the restrictive browser would allow you to view askanatheist.tv.
That's a very good question. Actually, when the iPad first came out, 3 or 4 years ago, I went to Best Buy to check one out before I bought mine. And what's the first website I pulled up? Well, it was Ask an Atheist. And yeah, it said blocked because it's religious content. We don't allow that at Best Buy. And then I hit the 700 Club and that went right up. So
yeah, it's interesting how the standards can change.
Yeah. This is Ask an Atheist, actually. 253-584-1480. And let's go into a quick email. This comes to us from Jeremy from Maryland. And he writes, what do you think of the idea that if there is no God, then your process of how you got here is simply a natural one? Also, if you exist and didn't before you were born, and after you die, you will be the same. Do you think that you can happen again after you die? Obviously, you happened once. Sorry, this is a confusing question.
It seems like he's asking us about reincarnation. That I do agree with him that I don't believe there's a God, and that my existence is entirely based on natural processes.
Mm-hmm.
That everyone knows the natural processes after, you know, fifth grade. They take you into the room and they tell you how that works.
Right.
I think that's the totality of it. Will I happen again? Is he saying that will the same genes or whatever that make up my body, there will be basically a clone of me somewhere?
Mathematically, given a finite genome and an infinite amount of time, yeah, you're going to see copies. You're going to see things happen more than once.
But is our genome really finite? I mean, part of the process of genetic mutation says, you know, that no, we don't have a finite genome. We have a certain number of combinations that can happen, but really the likelihood of repeating that particular set of combinations
is incredibly unlikely.
Incredibly low.
To go to that mathematical thing again, I said it's a finite genome, and you said, well, it doesn't have to be finite. If the universe is finite, then I would assume that our genome also in some way has to be finite. But, I mean, there is a limitation there.
But again, we haven't been around that long in the case of the universe, and there really aren't that many of us. I mean, if there were trillions upon trillions upon trillions of human beings, yeah, we might see something like this happen.
Wow, you just blocked my pedantic jerky with actual interesting things. That's cool.
Hey, that's the beauty of facts.
I love how he phrases it. Obviously, you happened once. Do we think that we can happen again after we die? I love this, that happening is sort of we have agency in our own happening.
Right. The idea of you as an event, too, I think is interesting. It's a very interesting way of looking at it. It's not the soul. It's not like you there's some sort of like the commerce thing. It's you are something that happens rather than just something that is.
Here's an interesting thought too, and this is just me as a fan of science fiction that has things like alternative universes, that I think that who you are is more than just the material you're made out of.
Yeah.
I don't mean like in terms of a soul or anything, but you're also the things that happen to you, and those also shape the person you become.
Mm-hmm.
So if something like me, just the material of me, happens again in another form, it's going to have a different life than me.
Sure.
And it won't necessarily be me.
There's people who believe, who have ideas about how identity works, that basically states that because, you know, things have happened to you and a lot of stuff has happened to you, and there's been so much change in your life, you've started asking atheist, you got away from some of the political stuff, and you are not the person you were 10 years ago. You're actually completely different people. And that continuity of identity that you feel with the person from 10 years ago is actually a fiction.
And if this copy of me had been born in, say, the 1300s, I would have been a very different person, too. One,
right,
obviously, I wouldn't have a radio show,
mm-hmm,
but my life would be completely different. Certainly, I wouldn't have been safe to be open as an atheist, and maybe I wouldn't have been an atheist.
Right.
The entire path of my life could be completely different.
Sure. I mean, and then there's the weird idea about duplicating identity and stuff like that. And I'll tell you, I've got a protocol that if I ever meet myself, that I'm going to follow. And if I ever meet myself, and that's to get away as quickly as possible, because I'm probably going to hate myself.
Sam is a replicant.
Yeah, it might happen. But I don't know that I, just because I am a circumstance of genetics and history and experience and stuff like that, I don't think that I will happen again. I think that just because of the way human experience and human development works and how much of it is nature and how much of it is nurture, I think I am a unique event. Mm-hmm. I guess
I'd also like to address, that there's not just this sort of dichotomy of either God exists or something is completely natural.
Yeah.
You know, humans, since we are self-aware, we have some agency in how we lead our lives. I don't think that, you know, once we're dead, you know, we can be resurrected and have agency again once we ourselves are dead.
Sure.
But, you know, it's not like things are just completely random. We are intentional about how we live our lives and how we carry out our life.
Yeah, that isn't just, you know, storms and other, you know, natural events that steer us around, but also the decisions of other people.
Right.
And that's the sort of thing I've always wanted to ask Richard Dawkins this, in terms of natural selection, that when we change our environment so much that we live in houses, we have clothes, we have medicine. How do we steer the path of evolution now? Is it not natural selection? Is it a weird sort of form of unintended artificial selection?
Right.
That will we not know what we look like in a million years? That versus the version of humanity that never invented like agriculture?
Right. That is a question that I've heard a lot of people debate as to what happens to natural selection once you can start affecting your own genome, or once you start thinking about the fact that you are evolving, or that your species is evolving.
But what about the other species that we affect by making choices that we don't necessarily choose? We are affecting the environment around us, including other animals.
Chickens and cows.
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly the artificial selection, the sheep that we have today, the cow we have today, you wouldn't have been able to, say, tip over a cow from 1,100 years ago.
I would think that
it would fight you.
I would think that it's more of an extension of sort of the predator-prey and natural pressures that go on that have shaped our organisms that we have now.
That's actually a good point. I had not considered that.
Well, in the case of corn... corn, it's not really predator or prey in that situation.
Ah,
corn
true.
Can't actually... Corn, as it stands today, doesn't work without human intervention.
Mm-hmm.
We intentionally bred corn for certain purposes.
Right, and then breeding and breeding it in those certain... for those things have made them not really work as plants anymore. I mean, they're plants, but
we need
not,
to pollinate them and help them along.
Has things like agriculture changed the way we've been able to process food? I mean, there's very little. If I lived out in the woods, I'd be able to actually eat. And I'm sure there's several things that my ancestors would have been able to eat without getting sick, like, say, raw meat.
Right, right. Yeah, that actually dietary changes and stuff like that. It's an interesting idea. So we'll do one more quick email before we go into the break. And this comes to us from Eric from Massachusetts, and he's Lee Strobel. What is your impression of the guy? Is he logical?
Lee
Big
Strobel.
Sigh from Mike.
Lee Strobel, where to start? Lee Strobel is an apologetics guy. He writes a series of books called The Case for Christ, The Case for a Creator, The Case for Christianity, The Case for...
Case for everything, yeah.
Basically everything in Christianity. He says that he was a journalist at one point. He worked for the Chicago Tribune.
Right.
And he decided that he would start investigating the claims of Christianity. The problem, though, is that he only talked to evangelical Christians.
Right.
He didn't talk to historians. He didn't talk to archaeologists. He didn't talk to anybody else aside from people within the realm of already accepting the idea that these supernatural claims are true. He didn't talk to people from other religions. He didn't talk to atheists, skeptics, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, anything like that. And he was, again, what Bob was talking about before when we were talking about apologetics, which is that apologetics, even though it puts on the clothing of a set of arguments to convince the non-believer, it's really about convincing the believer to believe.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really know who Lee Strobel was until we got this email, and then I checked him out, and I took a look, and I realized I'd heard a lot of speeches from this guy because he's included in clips, and other Christians refer to him, and other than being from my hometown, he's not really saying anything that we haven't heard a million times before, and he's only saying stuff that's been pretty well refuted. I mean, he's a very effective speaker, but he's not really adding anything into the discussion. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to catch up with Sean Faircloth.
Stop throwing money away.
Shop with NetPro Ink and Toner and save up to 60% off your printing cost. All of our compatible cartridges have a 100% full-year quality guarantee. Visit us at www.netprotx.com. That's NETPROTX.com.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince and I want to hide $1 billion in your locker.
Wow, $1 billion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780- 237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And with us now is Sean Faircloth, and he's the author of Attack of the Theocrats, How the Religious Right Harms Us All and What We Can Do About It. We've been pleased to have Sean on the show when he was director of the Secular Coalition for America. Now he serves as the director of strategy and policy for the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science in the United States. Welcome back, Sean. How are you?
Great to be with you.
Oh, great. So your book, Attack of the Theocrats, it outlines your 10-point vision for a secular America. What's the difference between an atheistic America and a secular America? Or is it just a synonym for atheist in this case?
I think both work. For me, what's most important is to appeal to the vast majority of Americans who agree with Thomas Jefferson, agree with Jack Kennedy, that we need a separation of church and state. That's our first hurdle, and we haven't met it. And I think partly it's our own fault, because the religious right has done a fantastic job of organizing, has done a fantastic job of framing issues, and we haven't. And that's what the 10-point vision of a secular America is about, is to be inclusive and to demonstrate through specific examples how regular people are harmed by religious privileging in American law. And by the way, not religious privileging that might happen if Mitt Romney wins, religious privileging that exists today.
Well, Sean, what are some of those specific examples of how religious privileging harms Americans?
Well, there's several, and I divide it into 10 categories. One that I often mention that people don't think of is land use planning and environmental law. But a federal law passed about 20 years ago specifically exempts religious organizations from many of the land use planning and environmental laws that would apply to your 501c3 nonprofit, your for-profit, or to an individual. In, for example, Boulder County, Colorado, they passed a countywide, this is local control for those of you who like the libertarian perspective, local control, where a local county passed an environmental and land use planning law, the big box megachurch sued and they won and said, we don't need to obey the law. All the rest of you do, but we don't need to. And that is a dramatic injustice. And then, of course, I often speak about the injustices to children that result from religious privileging in law. There's a YouTube video I do called Can Religion Justify Bullying Children? And not to give away the video, but the answer is, yes, it can in American law because it does, and two, morally, it cannot. You know, there's 8 more examples of categories, but it really covers the waterfront of American law.
Wow. So, you know, your book is called Attack of the Theocrats. Do you think that these are specific people, these are specific theocrats that are really the strong force, or is it just sort of an undercurrent in the way that the laws are structured?
There has been a concerted, organized effort since the 1970s to give privileging of fundamentalist religion, let's be clear what we're talking about,
right,
and successfully so, in American law. This was not the case in mid-20th century America, and I don't mean to say that religion wasn't powerful in the 50s. It certainly was. but that the nature of church power is different than it was. And it's an entrepreneurial approach. There's an interesting book that has sold millions of copies called Pastorpreneur, you know, combining the term pastor with entrepreneur. And they talk about this sort of business approach to growing mega churches. And not only does it benefit the growth of mega churches, which, by the way, were less than 100 in 1970, and now there's hundreds upon hundreds.
Yeah.
But moreover, and I think tellingly, with each mega church, you often see multiples of the mega ministers for each church. So now you're starting to see the demographic effect. Let's say you've got hundreds, as we do, hundreds upon hundreds of mega churches. Each mega church has a fundamentalist minister, you might think just one, but in fact, oftentimes there's two, three, four for each megachurch. And every one of those has an economic motivation because they get what many of your listeners may not be aware of is the parsonage exemption for their housing. And when I say housing, I define it, I don't define it, the IRS defines it broadly.
Yeah.
By which I mean not just the cost of your housing is exempt from, think about it, I think your listeners should just picture the situation. Say all of your housing costs, average listener, was not counted as income. Not only that, but your internet cost, because they say that's part of the housing, is not counted as income. The maintenance of your home, not counted as income. All of the things that you could sort of reasonably possibly relate to your housing costs, all exempt from being counted for income tax purposes. It's a tremendous boon, a financial motivation, and it has really come to be a dominating force in American life, and most people don't even know that the IRS is helping you and your listeners subsidize this.
Yeah, it's not just where they live, it's not just their apartment costs, it's their entire infrastructure is basically a tax write-off because it goes with the religion. And you end up with a lot of these pastorpreneurs, as you're calling them, with these really outlandish houses. And, you know, we've heard some ridiculous stories about a person who was in town recently who had a...
I believe Joyce Mayer was just local to Tacoma giving some of her right. teachings. And she has been scrutinized intensely for some of her housing costs.
For like a $75,000 bathroom or something silly like that. And it's...
Right.
It's because it's the parsonage stuff, it's all tax-free.
Yeah, and
I'm familiar with Joyce Meyer case, and one thing that I think is important, and I encourage your listeners to just, you can Google map Joyce Meyer's residence in Missouri, and let me tell you, you know, the King of England in the 1500s, he had nothing on Joyce Meyer.
Wow.
Really. I mean, you think about how royalty lived in the 1500s and 1600s, they lived well. Nothing even close to Joyce Meyer and her lifestyle today. But one thing that I would caution about Joyce Meyer is that she's the tip of the iceberg. What I would encourage your listeners to do is to consider sort of the mid-range. And that is, I did a video not too long ago about this topic, and I said, hey, check it out, folks. And people did it, and I encourage your listeners to do so because they weren't just going for the tip-top, the Joyce Meyers, the Joel Austin. I said, check in your community. And one person emailed me from Anchorage, Alaska, not exactly Houston, Texas, right? But yet there's a mega minister there that they describe extravagant home, living a very opulent lifestyle. As opulent as Joyce Meyer? No, but very opulent. Another person emailed me from Michigan, you know, rural Michigan, and another one like this. So, you know, there was something I remember somewhere about living humbly or the Jesus or something like that. Well, if you did, these folks see it slightly differently.
Actually, Sean, I have a local one to give you from the Washington area. Casey Treat, who's a big-time minister guy from around here. I work in retail. I rang him up once. This guy has just as much jewelry as Mr. T. He got into a zoning dispute because he wanted to add a helicopter pad to his mega church, I guess in the event of a Saigon exit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's pretty extravagant when you actually can't
Saigon
just...
Saigon exit, I like that.
you can't just drive to your church anymore. You have to be flown in by a helicopter. And he didn't pay a dime of taxes on any of it.
And I don't understand the psychology of it, but some people... It, because you'll see these people with, you know, suits that would put a Wall Street banker to shame. And yet, there'll be people giving them money. And to some degree, I will hear people argue to say, well, if they want to give them money, that's their choice. And there's an argument there.
Yeah.
But the counter argument I would offer is it shouldn't be money out of my pocket, which it currently is.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be money out of your listener's pocket, which it currently is. Because of the Parsons exemption, because they don't have to file a 990 like every other nonprofit, probably a lot of your listeners are on boards helping their community, working with a 501c3 nonprofit. They have to file a 990. Does the megachurch? No. No, they don't. Can you, as an individual, or your nonprofit, or for that matter, your software for-profit business, can they be audited by any IRS official? You bet they can, but not a megachurch. Under Ronald Reagan, they passed a law that said it only can be a so-called high IRS official that audits a church.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, that's...
The ironic story is back late 90s-ish, there was a church that the IRS said, hey, we've heard that you guys are endorsing from the pulpit, which, as you know, is something you're not supposed to do if you're going to get the IRS exemption. And so the IRS said, hey, we're going to investigate this. And the church countersued, and they said, oh, no, you don't, because you didn't sue us, or you did not seek an audit via a high IRS official. And the church won.
Oh, that is... Right. That is...
Yeah, because under the Reagan law, it wasn't a high IRS official. Now, if somebody wanted to audit, you know, you as the local guy who runs the local food truck that runs around Seattle and, you know, sells fish and chips, they can audit you, any old official.
Man, but don't
no,
I know it.
Not the multi-million dollar megachurch. And then the sort of little denouement to the story is that it turned out that the obscure politician that they were then endorsing became no longer so obscure. It was Michelle Bachmann when she was in a state legislative race.
Yeah,
and you see how that iron triangle works of money, religion, and politicians working together.
So, talking again about this pastoral exemption that these guys have against the law, there's a cost to that. Like you said, you can't endorse a party, you can't endorse a candidate, but we're seeing these Sunday pastor freedom pulpit events that they've been doing for several years now, where they basically throw down the gauntlet to the IRS and say, "We dare you to try to revoke our tax exempt status." Sometimes they even go as far as sending a tape of their sermon where they endorse a candidate or party to the IRS. But it seems like nobody seems to be picking up the gauntlet and throwing it back in their face. Why is the IRS so afraid to go after these guys all of a sudden?
It's a good question, and it's a good question to ask Barack Obama. I in my other life as an elected official, was an early endorser of Barack Obama. I'm proud of that, and as an individual, not in my job, but in my own individual capacity, I'll be happy to support him again. But am I concerned and disappointed? Because, ironically enough, last I checked, one George W. Bush, in his administration of the IRS, they actually did more investigation than has the Obama administration. Maybe that's for political calculation, where they say, you know, we're being attacked as, I don't know, the secular evil people or something. So he bends even further over backward to avoid this. I think it's a political mistake.
Yeah.
I think that there are those who would cheer. And I'm not just talking, I'm talking about liberal religious people included in this, that would cheer if a administration said, we're sick of this, we're going in, we're investigating, we're taking the offensive. But that has not been the tact of the Obama administration. They've been quite timid.
Well, do you think he's doing it because if he goes after these megachurches, he's gonna, just the accusations that he's an evil space Muslim are just going to go through the roof?
Right. That is, I think, fear. I mean, I can't get into his head, and I wouldn't pretend to get into his head or that of his advisors. But what I would say is that I disagree with it. I think that those who get out there, they're already going to say that he's a Muslim from Indonesia.
Okay.
He's going to do that no matter what he does. So in my view, if you got out there Harry Truman style and said, you know, when there's con artists, we're going after them. I'm not just talking about religion. when there's con artists on Wall Street, when there's con artists any place, we stand up for what's right and we go boldly. And I think you garner more votes that way. I actually think it's more muscular politics and more successful politics. But that's my opinion.
So, Sean, my opinion has actually been kind of evolving, I guess you could say, on this issue. And I used to be one that took more of a strident stance on, you know, we have to crack down on this with the IRS. But I'm losing a lot of my confidence in the IRS to be able to do this. And certainly these guys are never going to quit. They're never going to stop. It's always going to be like coming at you like a glacier. So, I mean, would the better solution possibly be to just let them endorse whatever they want, but make them pay taxes on these extravagant lifestyles? It seems like that would be a lot more valuable.
Well, I agree with you. Your likelihood or my likelihood of succeeding in that regard in the near future on either approach is, I'll be honest, close to nil. What I think needs to happen now is sunshine. You need to expose these practices to the light. I think to the degree this issue, particularly the extravagant lifestyles of the mega ministers, has been exposed, it's primarily been exposed. You had that little window with the Grassley Committee, which did nothing, by the way, about two and a half years ago. But the perception among the few informed people who even know about that is that this is an abuse committed by a small fraction. And that really it's an outlier. Vice President Biden said as much not too long ago. And the problem is Vice President Biden, who has a lot of good characteristics, but Vice President Biden was elected to Congress in 1970 when his comment would have been accurate. the nature of megachurches is dramatically different than it was in the early 1970s.
Yeah.
And the politicians who, even the good ones, the ones who, you know, might have a responsible approach to this, is really retrograde. They're really behind the times. And what our job must be is to expose the scale of the project. And that's one of the things Richard Dawkins Foundation is going to do. If you go to our new website, if you go to richarddawkins.net, and then you can link to our new website, and we have our projects and our activities that we're going to be engaging in the future. One of them is a documentary. I encourage your listeners to check into this, but it's going to be based on some of the ideas that I wrote about in my book, where we expose the lifestyles of the rich and religious, and then we interview and document the lives of the victims.
Okay.
The victims, including children, who are horribly, horribly tortured by so-called faith healing. The victims, certainly the classic cases in terms of women's rights and equality for gay people, but that only scratches the surface and covers areas that are more commonly known. What the 10-point vision of a secular America is designed to do is show, yes, everybody knows about those two issues. Here's eight more. Here's demonstrating through clear evidence how widespread this is, and furthermore, how different it is from the mid-60s and the 50s. I mean, when Barry Goldwater, Mr. Conservative, Mr. Republican, who I quote often in my book, said, I think I'm quoting him exactly, "I have no respect for the religious right." Barry Goldwater would have about, zero chance of being elected, you know, being nominated by the Republican Party today. And I think that shows you the change in America between the time when he and his very good friend John Kennedy were planning on running against each other in 1964.
Despite his near deification in Arizona, I can tell you. Sean, we do need to go into the break. Can you stick around through the break and we can keep talking?
Yes.
All right, great. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We're talking with Sean Faircloth, the Director of Strategy and Policy for the Richard Dawkins Foundation and author of The Attack of the Theocrats, and we'll be back in a moment.
Thank you.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Atheism TV. news, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communication succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
No human is burdened with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we're talking with Sean Faircloth. And Sean, the last time we spoke, it was at the NFA conference here in Renton. And you were talking about statewide organizations just as we were starting up our own statewide organization, the Evergreen State Freethought Federation.
Which I'm very excited about. And I like the conception. I read that flyer or brochure. And to me, the concept that you have is really a valuable one. When I came up with the idea of 50 statewide secular coalitions, which I think is the linchpin, the most important thing that we can do, I view it as certainly grassroots lobbying. That is to say, you know, lobbying your federal officials and lobbying your state elected officials, for example, in Olympia.
Right.
But in addition to that, I think of equal importance is creating a statewide network, including at least every other year, a statewide convention. I think that's really valuable because it sort of creates that network of people. So in Washington State's case, you know, people in the western part of Washington don't ignore the people in Spokane or, you know, in eastern Washington and networking. At least a convention every other year is a different thing.
Okay, yeah, that actually a convention right now is a pretty high priority for the ESFF. And so I know the Richard Dawkins Foundation is looking to do sort of interface with these statewide organizations as they spin up. And part of that drive was for the new website. What else is going on at the RDF as far as this stuff goes?
And let me just emphasize the website a little bit because we're just I encourage people to go to richarddawkins.net because we're just doing the beta. Unveiling the beta on the new website. We certainly welcome suggestions for improvement of that. But part of the essentials of that idea was that while the Richard Dawkins Foundation website has often and appropriately been a place for people to go find interesting articles or where Richard Dawkins is speaking or the book or, you know, interesting new videos, that sort of thing, continue with all that. But in addition, we're adding this layer of real activism and helping with organizing. And so statewide groups is very key to that. And that's a big part of my personal mission as director of strategy and policy. So I want to help people in Washington State, you know, do a grassroots training, talk about how to frame issues and do the same from, you know, Washington State to South Carolina and really get that going. We're also going to work underserved communities. So, Not the staff per se of Richard Dawkins Foundation, but say there might be listeners who are Latino humanists or African American atheists, whatever the case may be, that those folks would take a leadership role and use the Richard Dawkins website as a platform for discussions and postings about issues unique to those communities. Then I mentioned the documentary concept. We really want to reframe secular issues in a way that's to our political advantage, and then really organize to provide the base for that. Because speaking as someone who lobbied for 2 years at the state level, lobbied for 2 years at the federal level for secular issues, that's great, and it's very important. But until we build the infrastructure of people, grassroots people in every single state, we won't be anywhere near as strong as we could and should be.
That's exactly what we were thinking with the Evergreen State Free Thought Federation. There's so many organizations in Washington, in Western Washington, Eastern Washington, Central Washington, and if we could just get together and organize, we could, one, provide infrastructure for everyone so that it doesn't take as long for us to become mobile and to mobilize and to be places. And then it also gives us a much larger base from which to pull people and which to represent us down in Olympia. And this is really what it's for. For me, it's an organization of what's already there, not some new thing.
Please, valuable, because you want to have, I don't know, Skeptics in the Pub in Tacoma, or I don't know if that exists, but something like that. That's good.
You bet it does.
It's really important to have that. But in addition, you want each of the different types of secular groups to say, once a year, or if you can't swing that, once every other year, get together for a convention. I mean, that's what the state Republican Party does. That's what the state Democratic Party does. And I think that it would be really valuable for us to have that, to start to see, okay, who are the emerging leaders? Who can we cultivate as future leaders in each State of the Union? Because right now, speaking with someone who, you know, travels a fair bit, speaking on secular issues and meeting people, you know, there are some states and locations where you think, geez, this is a fairly populated city and don't have much of an infrastructure. A statewide organization can really help draw people together.
So speaking of your travel, when are you next going to be in Washington? You were here in April. And I think you're coming up sometime again in 2012.
I am scheduled to speak in the, I think, central or eastern Washington area near Kennewick. Is that how you pronounce that?
Actually, yes, it is pronounced Kennewick.
So we can stay tuned to see your upcoming talk in Kennewick, and that's going to be in the fall, I believe.
You're to come back to western Washington as well. As I said when I was speaking there with Richard Dawkins and Dr. Cornwell back a couple of months ago, I think it was April 1st, I think places like Washington State are really important, as are also the Union. But here's the two arguments I hear for people not to be active, and I want to sort of countervail those with what I think are the better arguments. As I'll hear people in states like, you know, very conservative states, Idaho, and they'll say, hey, it's so awful here. We got to throw up our hands. There's just nothing we can do. They're too far extreme to the right. Then I'll go to, you know, Connecticut or sometimes Washington State, places like that, and say, hey, those people here, they're already with us. They aren't interested. Forget about it. Got to hear that sometimes.
I think
they say, no. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think the take-home message is that it really is important, equally important in both places, with both environments of either, you know, an overpopulous of secular folks or a very, very small minority of secular-minded folks, that it's equally important in both places to mobilize. Sean.
And in seconds, yeah.
Sean, thank you so much for being with us today. It's always a pleasure talking with you. We love having you on the show. We'll be sure to link to Richard Dawkins Foundation website and encourage our listeners to check out the Beta website as well and to keep up on some of the new developments happening there.
And I hope people will and make suggestions on the new Beta website. If people can contact me about potential speaking engagements with Dr. Elizabeth Cornwell, Dr. Andy Thompson, and of course about Richard Dawkins, which of course takes more planning if that's people's hopes. But just to complete that quick thought is that with Washington State, there are actually some politicians there who might even listen to our arguments, which may be less the case in Mississippi. So that's even more of a reason to organize.
Wow. Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Now, you know what? It's Peggy's Challenge time. And, Mike, what is Peggy's Challenge?
Oh, well, Peggy from Kent, who's a listener, challenged other listeners a couple months ago to put their money where their ear is, I suppose, and support our show and help keep us on the air. Being on the radio costs money, and we appreciate every cent you send us. So this week we have donations from...
We have Michael from Tokyo in Japan and Luis from Denmark. Again, Luis, you've been a stalwart contributor for the last several weeks. We thank you so much.
And yeah, and check your mailbox.
And I'm just... I'm just floored that we have international contributors. It means a lot to us.
And I can give you some good news. It is the end of the season. It is the end of season 8. And thanks to Peggy's challenge and our wonderful advertisers, we're good to go for the next little bit, where season 9 is going to continue apace.
So you'll keep hearing from Ask an Atheist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Well... And as we were talking about, there's the Evergreen State Freethought Federation, and it's, you know, part of the reason why we need things like the ESFF, and part of what we want to do is community mobilization. And right now, there's sort of a political battle going on in Washington State, and it's over a piece of legislation that really shouldn't be on a ballot, but it is on a ballot. It's called Referendum 74.
Basically, a couple months ago, Governor Gregoire signed marriage equality into law in our state. And it seems that a number of organizations, mostly religious, often Catholic, don't like this, and they've been passing around petitions for a referendum to revoke that law.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they gathered enough signatures that it actually will appear on the ballot.
And the producers of Ask an Atheist made an agreement with ourselves that if Referendum 74 got enough signatures to make it onto the ballot, that we would actually raise funds in order to do whatever it was to allow marriage equality. Because back then, we weren't sure if you were supposed to be against it or for it. And for the record, under the current legislation, you have to vote for Referendum 74 if you want marriage equality, right?
Absolutely. It's a lot like saying that the bill that went before the legislators is now going before you.
Yeah.
When you vote to approve, you're voting to approve same-sex marriage. So just pretend that you were a state representative a couple months ago, and then that same piece of legislation is now on your desk, and you're asking for an up or down vote. So vote up.
Vote
approve.
Up. Yeah. Now, again, we have to say, why is a show like Ask an Atheist so interested in marriage equality? And it's something that we've been working on since the show began. I posed a question to people who pay attention to Ask an Atheist. I said, are there non-religious reasons to be against marriage equality? If there's a good reason that makes sense to atheists to be against marriage equality, maybe we shouldn't talk about it. You know, it's like politics. We don't talk about healthcare. If it could go either way, then we shouldn't talk about it. But lo and behold, we searched for, 6 months? It was a real long time. And the best thing we got was the thing that we covered on our first anniversary episode with Blacks and Bow and those folks. And was
the ick factor?
The ick factor.
Oh,
the ick factor and some misconstrued understanding of how all marriage is about reproduction, which clearly it's not.
And so we decided, it was very clear to us that opposition to marriage equality has its basis in religion. And there's no reason that we should be taking rights away from people so that other people can have their religion untested in the public square. So what are we doing? Well, we used to do these things to raise money, and on the internet. We decided to stop doing it because, you know, you don't want to get people too tired of it, and we thought maybe it was unfair for us to continue raising money that way. But we have a lot of fun doing it. So, July 13th and 14th, for 24 hours nonstop, we're doing another Blog TV Blogathon, where it's going to be us in front of a cameras talking about nearly anything. And I always have a lot of fun times doing these. We had like about a 4-hour conversation about Doctor Who.
Just about.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people would probably felt longer.
Yeah, yeah. And then
we had some puppetry.
Yeah.
We had some sci-fi talk.
We had puppetry. There was beer. There was discussion on why I'm a fan of puffins, and when I finally got to meet them, how terrible a human being I was. Just a lot of stuff that
Sam likes to laugh at the disabled.
Oh, man.
Disabled puffins.
As if that's any better.
Yeah, well. But this is the kind of stuff that we talk about, and it's a fun time. People will be joining and leaving, and we're gonna be raising funds just like we do every time. But instead of raising money for the show, we're raising money in support of Referendum 1974 with the Evergreen State Freethought Federation. That's what we're doing. It's not, so if you want to give to a good cause and if you want to give to charities, this is, and you want to work with Ask an Atheist, this is the time to do it. July 13th to 14th, noon to noon, blog TV, check the website for information. It's going to be a great time.
I think there's one point to make, and this actually bounces off of exactly what Sean ended on, which is the idea that, oh, well, things are too easy, we shouldn't fight here. Here's an example of the religious right in an environment where it isn't exactly the friendliest place for the religious right, and they're still fighting, and they're getting stuff on the ballot.
Yeah.
So imagine what we could do if we were just as organized.
And this is a historic vote. If this passes, this is going to be
This will be the first time that people, by a vote of the electorate, decide to affirm same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And I would be very proud to say I lived in the state where that happened.
Yeah, I would too. And
I will be proud to say that.
I will be proud to say it. And I'm really happy that Ask an Atheist is going to be a part of that. I'm really looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you had something about Lee Strobel. Had something you wanted to posit really quick from earlier in the show.
Oh, certainly. Lee Strobel, this is Mr. Apologetics. He's the guy who throws out arguments. Let me give you an example of a bad argument. I'm not going to debunk it. I'm just going to throw it out there. And the challenge to you is this. Not can you debunk this bad argument, but how quickly can you debunk it? And how many debunkations? I'm just going to make that word up. Can you come up with it? It's this. That he says that Jesus' disciples were willing to die for him. They were willing to die for the things they believed in. But who would ever die for something that wasn't true? Therefore, the things that they believed had to be true. That Jesus and his divinity had to be true. Otherwise, why would somebody be willing to die for them? And if you'd like to say why this is a bunch of crap, please go to askanatheist.tv, click the big red candy-like button, and let us know how bad this is. Some examples.
We were talking about this, and yeah, we had 15 different ways, but it's not can you, it's how many ways, right?
How many ways? We'll have to come up with a prize or something for the person who comes up with the most bad examples that debunk this argument.
I'm looking forward to that one. That's all the time we've got for this week. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me was Rebecca Friedman and Mike Gillis. Our special guest is Sean Faircloth. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman. Production assistant is Darren Garvin. Post show is at Doyle's at 5 o'clock. See you there. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv or leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. We're going to Doyle's. See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station.